why don't we ask the operator to do a roll call for us, and then we'll get started.
Would you like me to just call everyone who's online for you?
Yes, please, operator.
I have Tejal Gandhi, Lindsay Tai, Helen Burston, Diane Roderick, Jennifer Hurst, Stancil Riley, Cynthia Hohen, PJ Brennan, Janet Corrigan, Philip Schneider, Sally Tyler, Greg Meyer, Christine Goschel, Helen Lau, Michelle Victoroff, and Kathy McDonough.
And Peter N. Good. So thank you.
That's Michael Victoroff. Thank you.
We also have Aaron Graydon Baker and Doran Schneider.
Terrific. Thank you. Anyone on that didn't hear their name called? Okay. And do we have any members of the public who are happen to be on this line? All right. With that, I'd like to formally open the meeting of the Serious Reportable Events Steering Committee and turn it over to Greg and Sally for their opening comments, and then we'll move ahead with our agenda. But thank you all for making the effort to join us today.
Okay, great. Thank you, Peter, and thanks for all of you who were able to call in today. I know, you know, we only, because of logistics, we're only going to be meeting face-to-face a couple of times, so the bulk of our, the way we're going to get our work done will be in these type of settings to help move us forward. That's a good thing that most of you were able to call in for the call today. I've been really encouraged, actually, to see, even after our first meeting, and some of the recommendations and proposals we were able to move forward on the first meeting have already gotten so many comments. I think that's really encouraging. It's a testament to how seriously the work of NQF is taken within throughout the stakeholder community, that people are so interested in it and know that it does make a difference in the way that healthcare is being delivered in the United States. So very encouraged by that. I hope we all were encouraged by the variety of comments and the level of, and number of comments received. This is Sally again, and I'm in D.C., but actually in a conference that was not canceled, strangely enough. So there are very few people here, but because Secretary Sebelius did drag herself out, I figured I should drag myself out as well. So I'm going to be leaving after we talk a little bit about definitions, and then Greg is going to stay with you all to talk about moving into some other settings. And I know we've had a little bit of back and forth, and I know that I agree with all of you that who said that you don't want to get too hung up on parsing every single definition that we do, and I agree with that in terms of the tasks that are out for our committee, that we need to move forward on some things. We don't want to get hung up in semantics, but I also think it's very important that we have a framework for discussing our work that's easily understood by the public and other stakeholders and not easily misconstrued. So I think it is important for us to spend a little bit of time talking about definitions. And Peter had put together a deck of slides that I think he's going to walk through to help us hopefully talk a little bit more about a clear framework for definitions.
Sure, I'll be happy to do that. Greg, did you want to make any comments at this stage, or are you good?
Yeah, two quick things. I think the first one is to add my thanks to for everyone for taking the time to be on the call. And the second thing is that I think it's a positive sign that this discussion of serious reportable events is still capturing folks' imagination. So I think those who were worried that this was going to drop off the radar screen and people would stop paying attention to it, I think we have pretty strong proof that that's not the case, and I think that that's a good thing and a very healthy thing. We're getting back this feedback. The last thing I'd like to say before I turn it over to Peter is just, Peter, if you can, and I think we should do this each conference call, just remind us where we are in the process in terms of the consensus process for the NQF and how this piece fits in and a little bit about what's next.
Sure, and thanks, Greg. And as many of you remember from the orientation sessions, the consensus development process is pretty rigorous overall. The serious reportable events and the safe practices both are primarily NQF programs, but we do take them through the consensus development process in terms of review of major changes to those programs. This set of steps for the serious reportable events is a little bit different because we've got this first stage, which is reviewing the proposed definition. And so we have gone through this committee step where we propose the definition. Now we've just closed the public comment phase, and we are going to review those public comments. And depending on how we decide to move forward as a steering committee on this, we'll have to make some decisions as to what further steps we need to do in terms of next step of approval. And I'm going to ask Helen to step in just a moment because it is a little bit of a different series compared to our usual consensus development. However, before she comments, once we have got the final agreement on our SRE definition and the impact of these public comments, then we will issue a call for review of the existing serious reportable events, as well as the call for submission of ideas for potentially new serious reportable events. And we have to review both of those sets of information in the context of the existing list, as well as the proposed three expanded environments that we talked about at the face-to-face meeting. Those three expanded environments being ambulatory surgery or office-based surgery, long-term care with a focus on the skilled nursing facilities, and then the office-based practices environment. And so we will be forming technical advisory panels around those three environments, reviewing the existing SREs in the context of those environments, and then seeing if there are other new SREs that are more appropriate and specific for those environments. Once we get all of that information collated and assimilated, then that information goes up again for public comment, but the steering committee will review all of that information before further public comment. Once those public comments are back in place, this steering committee reviews all of that information, makes its suggestions for final proposal. That then goes to the Consensus Advisory Committee, or our CSAC, and then depending on how that dialogue goes, there may or may not be further refinements. And then it goes to the board for their final approval, and then there is an appeal process after the board approval to have a final step in this whole consensus development place. So that's the sequence of it, and we'll continue to remind you of it as we go through, because this is this program sits in a unique sort of strategy overall, but we are always very mindful of making sure we hit all of the steps of the CDP. Helen, did you want to make any comment in terms of the step between closing off the definition and then getting starting on the review of the SREs themselves?
Yeah, I think you got it right, Peter. I think the only thing for the committee to remember is that we decided to add this step to get comments on the revised definition, thinking it was enough of a departure from where we were existing that it made sense to get that done before we did the broader call for measures review of the new measures. We'll follow the usual consensus process, and NQF will go out for comment, vote to the CSAC, and then the board. And obviously, you'll be involved in every step along the process. So with that, thank you, and I'll turn it back over to Peter and the chair.
Yeah, thanks, Helen. All right, so with that as background, hopefully you've had a chance to re-review for yourselves the proposed definition changes and the subcomponents that were up for public comment, and we're not going to go through all of those today. But we picked up early in the public comments that there was a fair amount of discussion, and we anticipated that from the steering committee because we had our own high levels of discussion. And so Helen and I brainstormed a little bit, and we reviewed with Greg and Sally some of the concepts, and so I put together this few set of slides to help us with the focus and what's our overall intent. and to generate some further discussion before we get into the full review of the comments one by one. Lindsay and Jennifer collated all of those comments very nicely, and you've got those as a put together as a summary sheet, and then I'll categorize how the comments came together. The first slide on your slide deck, and it's in the PDF file as well, is what's our overarching goal? Well, truly, what we are trying to do is facilitate better reporting in healthcare. There's broad recognition, there's underreporting. We're still relatively young in the evolution of the science of public reporting for healthcare. And there is different levels of reporting, and we need to take that into consideration as well. And secondly, we really have to help healthcare continue to improve by generating this opportunity to improve the learning processes from reporting. And the SREs have really been a pivotal program in terms of precipitating reporting within healthcare overall, and that's why we bring it up as reporting as opposed to the event themselves as the overarching goal here. The reporting for organizational learning within each organization is one component, and then the second is the whole public knowledge and learning from both levels there. The steering committee that's focusing on the framework for measurement, evaluation, and public reporting of these so-called events is been meeting. We have a draft for that framework, and so far the work of this committee and that committee are overlapping quite nicely, and I think we're being successful in making sure that the synergy will come out through these two steering committees. In our discussions, we went back and thought through some of the concepts that were coming out during our face-to-face meeting, as well as reviewed some of the public comments. And we continue to recognize that the serious reportable events are those events that are really very rare and certainly very severe. And by and large, there's agreement that this should not happen all of the time. They just shouldn't happen. And yet there, as we remember, we had that really robust discussion about the Venn diagram in the first day of our face-to-face meeting. And there's this recognition that there's a more common, frequently or relatively frequently set of events that occur regularly. They shouldn't occur, but they do, and there's a variety of reasons why they do occur. It can be related to the patient, it can be related to the processes, it can be related to a combination of things. And so the reality is that while you would prefer that they never occur, the reality is they do occur still. And so we've brought in this term patient safety events. It's what we hope is a generic sounding event, term. It's a term we're using in that other steering committee as well. And we're trying to clarify sort of the differences between these two events. The serious reportable events should never happen 100% of the time, period. They're rare and they're certainly severe. These patient safety events, common, less severe, in proper care, they should not occur, but that's never going to be the case 100% of the time. And an important point in our discussions was the second bullet on that slide, is that over time, as the evidence base continues to accrue on some of these events, then the care processes will improve to a level that those types, some of those events actually become so-called serious reportable events. And it's a great example. The central line associated bloodstream infection has really proven that up. There's a few other examples out there, obviously. But this one is really a beacon for how that can occur. And you could argue at some point the CLABSI should become a serious reportable event if they do begin to occur. So that's an example of what we're trying to drive through here. Now, in the other steering committee and a little bit in our discussions, we recognize that there's this issue of frequency and severity. And you can set up basically an x-axis and a y-axis and have four quadrants. And so you have other types of events that occur there. Some are high frequency and low severity. And there are others that are lower frequency and low severity. The high frequency ones, but low impact or low severity on patients, you know, for the purposes of reporting at this stage in the evolution of the science, not really necessary, not really expected. But for those high-performing organizations, for their own QI and process improvement purposes, they may choose to report some of those and to learn from those types of events. So we've got those two kinds of categories, and then we continue to make sure that this issue of near-miss or near-miss events does not get lost. And both in the discussions of this committee as well as our framework committee, the issue of near-miss events has been felt to be important and one that needs to be addressed, primarily because those events will continue to occur. They are great learning opportunities, as we all know. And so how do we bring that into the whole equation? So that's
Peter,
first.
This is just two quick things. One of them is, yep. should committee members just feel free to kind of stop here? Do you want to try to go through the set and take questions? And the second point I want to make is Deborah Nodson contacted me, told me she couldn't be on the beginning of the call,
yep.
She'll join us later. The one point she wanted to to bring the discussion is with regard to this slide, and it was her plea that we move away from near miss and instead call them close calls, just because of the confusion that generates.
Right, right. And we can do it either way, whatever the group's preference is. We can.
Your call.
Well, why don't we, if you don't mind, why don't we just blast through the rest of the presentation? I won't bog it down because the discussion's rich and. I want to make sure that we don't interrupt the flow of things, if you don't mind. And I've got Deb's call as well. But so, if you don't mind, then we've got serious reportable events, patient safety events, we've got other types of categories, and then we've got the near-miss events, which could be named in different ways. We set up this, instead of the Venn diagram, and we recognize there's different ways you can draw this thing, but to help with the severity and frequency concept, we set up this diagram that's on the next slide. And as you can see, it gives you the four quadrants. The NQF, serious reportable events, are in their own space up there. And we haven't put subcategories on that larger grouping of patient safety events, but arguably you could make subcategories inside that larger rectangle as well. As you can see, most of them are higher frequency, higher levels of severity, but it also does go down towards the lower severity and the lower frequency groupings as well. And then we've got the separate other boxes there for the low frequency, low severity, high frequency, low severity, and near misses can occur in all areas. Now, a concept that We, in our deliberations and trying to work through this, was the amount or the degree of preventability, and this is another point of discussion, but we recognize that, several of these things should be prevented, should not occur, but the degree of preventability varies depending, again, on a variety of situations. Could be organizational, it could be patient, could be provider, et cetera. And so we just bring in this term as an introduction at the risk of making the discussion a little bit more confusing, but we recognize that some of these events should be universally preventable, 100% of the time. And those would be the so-called never events, that colloquial term that's been, you know, reasonably well accepted out there. And then usually preventable, again, gets back to the issue of with good practices, evidence-based recommendations, things should be safe. So to help with that, the next two slides are really just a three-dimensional attempt. So the first slide, just you're taking that first graph and laying it flat, and then the second just it brings in this third-dimensional vector of preventability. So really just a diagrammatic representation, nothing more than that. And the last slide is really trying to address the issue of never events. It's, again, restating to the group, we haven't promulgated that term, but it has been taken up. It's you know, popular culture, if you will, and it continues to be used. It's generated a lot of discussion. So there are potential ramifications for removing the term, and we recognize that. And then as we try to bring in these other concepts, we need to have other terms that have strength in their connotation as well as strength in their cachet in terms of catching the popular culture's imagination as well as their commitment to try and have these things become an important part of healthcare overall. So with that, I'll stop. The issues are around the terms, the issues around the concept, and then the issue around preventability. And thank you for the opportunity to bring that up. But Greg?
Sorry for the delay there on the mute. So I think that let's just start with, let me open it up to comments from committee members. I do think there are a couple of issues I would kind of put on the table to kick off the conversation. I think the first one relates to the overarching goal, which I think we should be able to move through relatively quickly. I think that the next one I'd like to focusing on is the use of the term patient safety event. A third is the concept of close calls versus near misses and where the committee wants to come on that. And the final one, I think the final big one, is this issue of preventability. And I think there are two pieces there. I think the first is how desirable it is to put it into the discussion. And then secondly, whether or not we think we can put it, whether or not we think we can operationalize that. And so with that, I'm just going to ask people to have any comments on anyone want to say anything about the overarching goal that Peter outlined? Okay.
This is Eric. I think that's fine. We can get down to the nitty gritty, but I don't think there's a problem with that.
Well, let's get down to it then. The second one is the issue on the inclusion of the concept of patient safety events. And as Peter said, part of the idea here was to try to make it consistent across the various committees that they're working with, and others have adopted this. And I want to see if people have a strong feeling one way or another about this.
Yeah, this is Duran. I think it may cause confusion in the sense that, you know, at least maybe this kind of brings us back to the Venn diagram, but when you bring up patient safety events and you try to educate the public, in my head, a serious reportable event would be a subcategory of patient safety events, of which the minor events should be termed something different, such as a precursor event or some other event with less harm. I understand where you're going with it, but I personally find it a little bit confusing.
This is Eric again. I'm struggling along the same line, and unfortunately the Venn diagram throws me off too, because you kind of have to be an insider to figure out some of the jargon. And if we come at it from, I think, where we should come at it, which is from the public's perspective, Duran's right. Some of this is a little bit more confusing than it needs to be. Now, maybe all the words are right, maybe everything's correct, but again, if we take the perspective of how does the public perceive this, I think we've got some work left.
I guess also, this is Stan, in thinking about the language, the old adverse events or, you know, serious reportable events, they all have such a negative connotation to the public. You know, I'm thinking that patient safety events would at least allow the discussion to be open without people going, you know, why on earth is that happening?
So this is Michael Victoroff. I noticed that we have quite a mixture in our list. I haven't categorized them all, but I think the decision that I need to come to is if our list of serious reportable events are reportable because they're of highest concern, and they're outrageous or inflammatory or never, you want to make up some adjective for them, that's fine with me. But the point of them is that they ring the bell of the highest level of concern for the public, the public's trust in the healthcare system. That's my working definition. And the patient safety events, being very differently, for me, comprise the entire universe of 5,000 million errors that can be classified in somebody's taxonomy. But we couldn't possibly list them all, and I'm thinking that it would be a big mistake to try to pull out some of them that we felt were not of highest concern, but nevertheless somebody could vote that they were errors. The decision, it seems to me, I need to face is, are we just going to talk about all errors are bad and some of them are highest concern and some are just events? Or are we just going to make a list of the ones that NQF wants to propose as the leading things of public concern? And preventability, yeah, that's interesting, but I don't think it's determinative.
This is Kathy, and I think the patient safety events term I like as a broad term, but I also had the confusion of on the diagram with the SREs being off in the corner. I think they're really probably a subset of patient safety events, and I do like the idea of being consistent with other work, because that's one thing that I'm finding a sensitivity to as I read various documents. I'm trying to make sure that we don't come up with so much nomenclature that it's really difficult to figure out what we're really talking about, whether it's with NQF or other organizations. So I like the overall concept, but maybe need some clarity in relation to SREs.
This is Sally, and I have a question for all of you, something that occurred to me as I was looking through this and the difference between SRE and PSC. Does broadening our list to now include these PSEs, if we do that, since we haven't yet reached anywhere near the level of reporting that we want to, even on the SREs, does that in some way dilute the goal of increased reporting, even in the SREs, by now even broadening this and having many, many, many other categories that we're trying to get reporting on? Does that in any way weaken our overarching goal on reporting, or is it just yet another facet to what we're doing?
This is Duran again. I don't think that we should be creating a secondary list of PSEs. I think that they would fall into the other category. So I think our charge is to create a SRE list, and then all others would be PSEs. Items like falls and pressure ulcers really fall under the axis of preventability, and I would just offer that perhaps we need a discussion about, you know, them being in the other category as opposed to the SRE if we make preventability, you know, a major consideration.
One thing, I think, this is Greg, I think one thing that might help at this point, I think those are great comments, and I think that on the one hand, I think we could be pretty narrow in our focus and say what we really need to do is just, you know, update and revise this list of serious reportable events. I think the bigger context is how this work, how it's envisioned by NQF, that this work fits in with the rest of their patient safety portfolio and in trying to achieve consistency in language across them. And so with that, I'd like to hear a little bit from kind of Peter or Helen about how they think that including this would be helpful in terms of making the whole agenda fit together.
Sure, I'll go first and certainly want Helen's view on it as well. But the last couple of comments actually I think helped provide a bit more focus on it. And the reality is we have an existing list of SREs. And yet when you look critically through that list, what's part of the debate is that a few of those on the list are not preventable all of the time. The majority are, but not all of them. And so if we want to review the list and tighten the definitions, maybe some of those existing SREs don't belong on that SRE list anymore because of the fact that they are not 100% preventable. Well, if they're not going to be on the list, potentially, I'm not saying they have to come off, but potentially if they come off that list, they need to be able to be categorized in some other way. And that's where this issue of patient safety events and the fact that there are all these things going on that need to be addressed in terms of process improvement and quality improvement and at some point reportability. Now, within this steering committee and within the other steering committees, there's a lot of recognition that this, however we want to call them and however we want to draw the diagram around them, these PSEs are out there, and there's actually a preference that the focus for driving improvement begins to focus on these types of events rather than on the rare and the most drastic problems. So the framework steering committee is trying to set up the concepts for reporting to accommodate these PSEs and to drive that process as well, recognizing that the NQF's SREs are an important part in all of this, and they certainly do galvanize the concepts in many, many ways that some things just should never, ever happen. But I think we have to clean up our existing SRE list a little bit. If we're going to bring some other ones onto that SRE list in the future, we have to know what the criteria are to get onto that list. And for everything else, there's a desire to address those things, but we need to categorize them in some way and not create new things. And so there are existing taxonomies, there are existing classification systems, there are other reporting systems. We don't want to get in the way of that. Our primary focus is the SREs, but we have to recognize there's these other issues as well. So hopefully I haven't confused you that much more. But Helen, you've got other views on this and different perspective.
No, I think that's about right, Peter. I think the only thing I'd want the committee to keep in mind is don't get hung up on, you know, what one committee is doing versus another. I think we can reconcile that.
Yeah.
If you have strong feelings one way or another, we'll go back to the measurement framework committee. We just want to, at the end of the day, have something that makes sense for the end user. So, with that in mind, give us the ideas that you think make the most sense, and we'll make it work across the products, the projects.
This is Chris Goschel. I'd just like to throw in there for a moment, and I think I said this at our first face-to-face meeting. I appreciate all of the comments that are being offered up, particularly Peter and Helen, your promise of reconciling across groups, because in the work that we're doing, the Hopkins group and HRET and others across the country around CLABSI, and more important, some of the work that I'm involved with the WHO Patient Safety Program, I think I've said it before, but around the world, and I know that's not our focus, but around the world, looking at what NQF puts forth and looking at what the Joint Commission puts forth and to a certain degree what the WHO puts forth are kind of the three groups where the world looks for leadership in terms of taxonomies and terms, and what we put forth will be widely used. And the struggle around terms is something that we are dealing with on many fronts. So reconciling and showing the linkages and clarifying why we end up where we end up, I think is going to be an important piece of work for the NQF in total, and for our steering committee in particular.
This is Diane. I just wanted to say, I'm not sure who it was, if it was maybe Michael, who said something about, preventability is interesting, but it's not determinative. And I have to agree with that. I sometimes feel like the discussion, when I look at the overarching goal that's been laid out for this set of events and the focus on learning and reporting, preventability feels like a bit of a red herring for me sometimes, and it feels a bit awkward to try and set up this separate set of PSEs that may not be preventable and then split out the SREs that are preventable 100% of the time, partly because the existing list of SREs, they're not all preventable, especially falls and pressure ulcers, but they usually are, and that threshold of where is preventability has been changing all the time. I mean, you know, we have facilities that are preventing pressure ulcers or falls that they never thought they would have been able to before, and so raising it to that level and putting it on the SRE list has driven a lot of change and a lot of learning, which is what the overarching goal of this reporting system is supposed to be. I feel like if we get too bogged down into that issue of never happen versus not happen versus usually not happen, and try and move the taxonomy around to fit that issue of preventability, I think we move away from that overarching goal of where can we learn and where can we push the envelope on preventability. So, you know, I'm okay with some sort of tiering within the SRE list or some sort of acknowledgement within the SRE list that some of these events should never happen, and some of them we can't quite say that yet, although we may someday be able to. But setting it up as a narrower list of SREs and then a broader universe of PSEs where we're not quite clear how they fit together, to me, ends up moving us a little bit away from that goal that we're trying to achieve with this system in the first place.
Yeah, this is Helen. If I could just respond to that, we actually, and maybe it didn't come across well, did not want to go away from the broader set of events still being SREs, but thought there might be an appropriate stratification to allow for the ones that we think really were universally preventable versus the ones where preventability is still in question.
Yeah, this is Janet Corrigan. I wanted to listen to your discussion a little bit because I've been watching this all unfold. And I want to emphasize that point that Helen just made. I think it makes a whole lot of sense to stick with SREs and think about tiering within it. The SREs is something that everybody knows, and I get a little bit fearful as we begin to have this proliferation of different categories. A lot of this is insider speak to all of you and us that work in this area, but we need to communicate with a broader audience, and to the extent we can keep it simple and as was so articulately, really encourage where something may not be 100% preventable today, but to encourage the field to strive towards it, and hopefully it will be in a year or two or three from now. It would really be a wonderful way to approach it, I think.
So this is Duran again. If we have tiering, then we're going to have to tier the definitions, with never being the top tier and not being the lower tier to address the preventability issue.
Although I think, and this is Helen again, I think we thought perhaps the lens of preventability, since it's actually already in the definition, might be a more positive stratification than trying to say never versus not.
Yeah, again, this is Diane again. I do feel, you know, the discussion about never versus not when we had our face-to-face meeting was interesting, although there were divisions even within the group, and reading the comments related to never versus not is very interesting. It's clear that for the general public, when they think of the serious reportable events, they don't think of falls and pressure ulcers, which are by far the most commonly reported events. They think of wrong blood, wrong limb being cut off. They think of the ones that really are never. And I say that from the perspective of, you know, we've got somewhere, we've been collecting data for nearly 7 years in Minnesota, and they've never happened. But those are the ones that people automatically think about as never events. In some ways, you know, this would probably spark even more concern and debate and division among members of the public who are commenting on this. In some ways, it feels that you just take that clause out entirely and you don't even deal with the issue of preventability, and we just talk about these as serious reportable events that we can learn from to improve patient safety, rather than getting into the quagmire of never preventable versus not preventable versus usually preventable.
Yes, this
especially
is Michael. I like that.
Yes, this is Greg, and I do think that's really the direction that we'd like to move this in terms of changing the definition, getting rid of the term never. I think it opens us up to that last discussion, and I think that's right on. The fact is that preventability is going to be a moving target, as it should be, and one of the things that we hope for is the development of this list will help us drive down the number of things that are on that list of events that should never occur in healthcare. And so, to me, this is it's the right step to not only change the definition, but to recognize that preventability will change over time. And I think if we try to lock ourselves into any definition of preventability or tiering on that basis, it's going to be even more difficult to implement this. The idea behind this is these are things that should not occur, and there's things where there should be public accountability and reporting on them, and we should learn from them. And I think that's a great starting point.
Could I make a suggestion that we drop falls and pressure ulcers, but capture what they mean, which is death and disability due to accidents, and maybe find a way to just use that term accidents, looking at, you know, burns and shocks, and, you know, we could also put scalds and lacerations, and I don't know what all, poison, you know, got poison food in the cafeteria. There are a lot of, you know, environmental accidents that really shouldn't kill people in the hospital, and I would be very happy to say that a fall that kills somebody in a hospital is something we should all know about, and maybe a measure of something, and it should be reported. And part of the problem with falls and pressure ulcers, the way they're listed, is that we tend to be thinking of the ones that happen all the time. They usually don't kill people.
Who made the comment?
This is Michael Victorov.
Okay, thanks, Michael. Sally, just don't forget to identify yourself since we can't see everybody.
This is Diane. I don't know that I would put pressure ulcers in the category of accidents, though. I get what you're going for with that. Pressure ulcers are a bit of an odd bird, though, and I don't know if they could really be categorized in the same way that falls could, which with a fall being a discrete event when you know when it happened and usually know how it happened, whereas a pressure ulcer can develop over a long period of time or a short period of time.
I agree.
This is Debbie Nads. I'm sorry I was late joining the call, but I'm on now. I would be concerned about eliminating falls that lead to death or permanent injury. And pressure ulcers, you know, there's that meeting coming up in a couple of weeks in Baltimore related to preventable and avoidable and non-avoidable. I'm not sure what word they're using. And there may be something that comes out of that that we should be tuned into as well.
Greg, are you on? Are you on mute, perhaps?
I am. So I think I guess the question is where do we go from here? A good discussion. I do think that I'd like to hear how much folks are in agreement with the statements as made by Janet and the notion of where we want preventability to come in. And I don't know if there's a way, Lindsay or Peter, to kind of summarize that so that we can react to it and maybe take a quick sense of the committee, or whether or not we need to come back to this offline, which I'd rather not do. I'd like to get as much accomplished on this call as possible. So is there a way I guess the way I would put this together is that there does seem to be value in moving away from the term never, because it gets us into the quagmire of preventability, that there is value in terms of having people focus on a list of events. There is going to be ongoing controversy on some of these, and in particular pressure ulcers and falls we just heard. On the falls front, when somebody gets seriously injured or dies, I think the notion is that there may be times when we could go back and say that's not preventable. But I would go on to say, with that said, we should still include them in this list. They should still be reported. And the second one would be on pressure ulcers. I'd be interested to hear what comes out of this next conference. I think it is probably the single most controversial of them in practical operations of all of them. So with that, I would like to try to see if we can move forward a little bit on some of the rest of the points that Peter made in his initial presentation, but I want to hear if there's pushback on that.
No, this is Eric again. I think I'd be a little cautious about trying to embrace accidents. It's come up a bit in the discussions now, especially with regards to falls and pressure ulcers, and I think we'd just be entering a deeper quagmire than trying to explain what accidents were.
Hi, this is Tejal Gandhi. You know, I still do like the concept of having some kind of stratification in the list, because although we know many of the falls, deaths and serious disability, you know, are preventable, you know, this is where we've run into a lot of troubles with reporting, is the ones that aren't necessarily preventable. And I don't have any problem with reporting all of them, but I feel like the people who are doing the reporting get very uncomfortable when the preventable is in the definition, yet they have to report ones that they really don't think are preventable. So especially because preventable is in the definition, I feel like some kind of stratification in the list to kind of give that clarification that these may not always be preventable would be helpful.
Hi, this is Stan. I guess I agree with Tejal. I think that stratifying the list would be really helpful, particularly for those who are going to report. As sort of the receiver of reports, it's really difficult for us to parse some of these things as well.
And this is Diane. One thing that became clear to me in the comments that were received and that has become clear to us over the years is even though we talk about the fact that not all of these events are preventable, particularly with falls and pressure ulcers, you have no control of the message at a certain point. And the comments really made that clear to me. We can call these never events. We can call these events that should not happen, that should, you know, usually not happen. We could make no comment at all about preventability. And people are still going to kind of take these events and run with them and do what they're going to do with them. And they're going to, in some cases, refer to them as never events, whether or not that was really the intent. Others are going to go the opposite direction and are going to really focus on the ones that weren't preventable and try and highlight that. And so, again, in some ways, although I think having some discussion of preventability or some sort of tiering within the list, although that will be difficult because preventability is a moving target and things could move from being preventable or non-preventable, again, a part of me thinks it's better to just stay out of the preventability business altogether because people are going to still have their opinions on it and are still going to spin it in whatever way they're going to spin it, regardless of what NQF does and regardless of what term is in the definition.
It's Peter. If I could just ask you, though, to take your thought another step, because I think I heard you say you're okay with tiering the list.
I am, but it's just it would be hard to have kind of a rigid tiering system when some of these things may change in terms of whether or not they're preventable. And even within a category, some things can be preventable and some are not. So I'm okay with tiering, but it needs to be a flexible system somehow.
And so I guess my question really is then, if we don't use something like preventability, which has its own issues and potential fault lines, how would you set up a tiering, though, other than us as a smart group of people saying this is absolutely never and this is a not?
You know, the way that we try and deal with that here is not by explicitly saying this type of event is preventable and this type of event is not. We try and talk about it in more general terms and just help people understand some of the nuances around these events. Because we're aware that even within the category of falls, you know, it can be all over the map. And dealing with it in more of a general way, just in terms of how we talk about these events, may not be possible for NQF, and maybe it does have to be more differentiated than we are able to do as a state when we talk about our reporting system.
All right. And it's complicated, and that's why we as a group overall in this steering committee, I think, struggle with it, whether we deal with it in terms of the severity versus frequency and trying to bring in another term or whether we do a Venn diagram. We come back to the same set of arguments repeatedly, and that's that, you know, there are some things that just should never happen, and then there's a whole bunch of other things that probably shouldn't happen. Ideally, they won't happen, but they do happen, and because...
And they do happen, they're worthy of public reporting for
correct.
Learning and for accountability.
Right.
And I think that's a helpful way of putting together the language.
Yep. So it sounds to me that Greg has challenged the group a couple of times. It sounds like we're gravitating towards using the term not instead of never, and we're gravitating to some sort of tiered approach to the list. And the debate still is sort of how do we tier, whether it's off this preventability issue or some other approach. And we continue to recognize there's a broader set of events as well as this smaller subset of the NQF SRE list. Is that a fair encapsulation where we're at so far? I don't want anybody feeling like we've got them arm wrestled into a corner.
I think
I think that's fair. The one other caveat, this is Greg, that I would add to that is that I do think, and this is already well known to NQF, but I do think there's going to be a lot of work for NQF to do in terms of trying to help educate the public on an ongoing basis. I think that this suite of patient safety work that you're doing is going to be a great opportunity to do this. But to the extent that we don't want people to conflate this list with things that absolutely never, ever should happen under any circumstance, is work to be done.
Exactly.
And, Peter, this is Kathy. I thought your representation was fair, and I would support that. And I really don't see anything wrong with understanding that this is a point in time and that we need to educate folks about the fact that preventability and some of these other factors are changing as the whole science of patient safety changes and improves. So I like the idea of some level of tiering for understandability in the public and just some explanation around the fact that it is a changing process.
This is Helen Lau. I agree with the lady, what she just said, and I think what the key is how we package the message to the public when we deliver that. And yes, there's a lot of learning with preventable and should not happen, and I think it's how we package that again to the public.
And this is Sally. I would agree wholeheartedly with what's been said again, that what we're talking about now does present probably a challenge, putting more work on us for public education and regarding the message. We've all got to realize that we can't control how other groups in the public are going to talk about it, and also that we shouldn't, that it's perfectly fine if we're moving away from the term never and using not more broadly, that it's perfectly fine if groups in the public want to continue using the term never events. It's fine. It doesn't impact this work. That's an easier term for people to hang their hat on in some ways, and so that's just fine. The main thing, you know, for us, if we're talking about this work, is just what aids in the best greater reporting, and I think that's what we're getting at with the core of this work. So it's even though we do have a burden on us as far as messaging and public education, it's fine to realize that the people in the public may continue to talk about this differently, and that doesn't impact this work.
What about adding a column? This is Michael again. It would help me a lot if we added a column to our three existing columns that was a comment on avoidability or preventability, and it wouldn't mean we'd have to comment on every one, but on the few where it's an issue, that would solve for me this business of packaging, which I think is the correct approach.
This is Duran. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I also would think that we may want to think about the use of our phrase, the risk thereof, and how that impacts as well in this discussion, because we should remind ourselves that we changed that as well at a very high level. And perhaps instead of at a very high level where we are saying the risk thereof, we put that in the column. So, for example, you know, a fall, all falls have a risk thereof of death. But I'm not sure we want to have that risk thereof within the fall definition, if you will. So that's another discussion point, but I think it kind of does fall within this frame, this discussion as well.
Thanks, and that's actually a good reminder and perhaps a bit of a prompt. We do want to go through the list of comments from the public comment, and that did come up in those points. We have some other issues to address beyond what we've talked about so far.
This is Phil Schneider, and was the suggestion to have another column on preventability?
Yeah,
no, I believe that was it.
Yeah. I am wondering, I'm always mindful of a comment that Lucian Leap made that said there all adverse events are preventable, or you need to think of it that way. And this idea that there's a whole conference on pressure ulcers, and my guess is it's almost like a consensus development conference where there's differences of opinion that presumably somebody would, a group of experts would come to some conclusion, being ambitious as to, you know, how you know, what constitutes a preventable event with pressure ulcers. And I could see spending a lot of time trying to figure that out, I guess, or not having enough detail to know, like with a fall, whether the bed rails were up or not. And I'm thinking back to some of the work that I did with USP, with their medication error reporting programs, and at the hospital when I was still there, we often had to go back to really find out all of the details that were necessary to really characterize not only what happened, but whether it was really preventable and whether a system change could reduce the chance of that event happening again. So while I'm big on pushing preventability, it seems like a kind of a slippery slope and would add a lot to the work of evaluating these events.
I think we need it in there so that we can start the tiering discussion.
Mm-hmm.
That fall would be an SRE. It just would fall into a separate category of SRE, one that is not preventable 100% of the time. So that fourth column would be helpful as we start to try to categorize these.
So would you look at more of a yes, no, or dichotomous column, like it's definitely preventable, or it's either yes or definitely or not definitely?
Well, when you look at the list of 28 SREs, the majority of them are 100% preventable. They just shouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And as we sort of reset the parameters of this SRE list and this move towards tiering, then we need some type of criteria to do that so that there will be reporting. But NQF's not going to get into the job of making judgments of preventability. That will be judgment calls that occur at the individual organization levels. And if different other types of reporting entities who receive reports choose to use the preventability, then that will be somewhat their criteria to set in terms of how do they interact with the organizations to decide what was truly preventable versus not.
Peter, this is Helen. I think that's something that would actually be helpful for the committee to discuss. I guess my interpretation was we would actually try to do at least a dichotomous tiering, and it might be helpful for the committee to help think through some criteria that allows us to determine which events are universally preventable. And at least when Peter and I did a back-of-the-envelope review together, it was quite obvious which ones, you know, systems approaches should never happen, wrong limb, things like that, the more classic never events, whereas the one where the evidence base is just not quite fully there, like preventing all falls, it was easier to see that might fit into that category. So perhaps one, you know, that additional column suggested earlier might be helpful to give us a read by the committee of how close we are to, in fact, you know, some criteria and a dichotomization that might be useful.
I agree with that, Helen. That's fair.
Yeah.
Thanks.
This is Helen Lau. I agree with that, too.
This is Greg. I agree with that, and I think that it really wouldn't be that difficult for us to if we made the criteria to say these are 100% preventable in all cases that we've encountered. I think we could come up with that list, and there are many things on that list. I think there are others where it's more ambiguous, and maybe that should just be the dichotomy between the two. But with that said, there are serious reportable events. These are things that should not occur. Among those that should not occur, there are some that should never occur under any circumstance that we've encountered. There are others that they should not occur, but there are circumstances where, in fact, they may not be preventable. And I think that may move us forward a little bit.
And Helen, were you suggesting that processes might be fully preventable, whereas other events such as outcomes may not be?
You know, I don't know that we thought it through that much, but at least, again, very simple back-of-the-envelope review by Peter and I, it seemed to have that there were some things that with, you know, clear system approaches, these things just shouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there was a fair amount of things where the evidence base kind of falls off, and you can't always assume, even if following the most up-to-date evidence-based prevention, you know, evidence-based guidelines, that these things should truly never happen. So that's why I think it would be helpful for the committee to kind of come up with some criteria that we can use as you're making that determination of 100% preventable, or, you know, perhaps you should even just say 100% preventable versus, you know, usually generally preventable or something like that, just to make that dichotomy. And then the ones that are 100% preventable are the so-called never events that I think we really heard a lot of the, you know, passionate response from in the comment period.
Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Stan.
I,
So in a way, we're really talking about preventable or maybe instead of not. Is that right?
You guys can parse the words, but I think, you know,
yep.
Definitely, yes, I think so.
Yeah, we'll have to work on the wording a little bit there, Stan. This is Greg, but I think that the concept is always preventable in those which are still important. There's public accountability that makes sense to have them reported. We ought to learn from them, but we recognize that there's more ambiguity.
I like the word usually instead of maybe.
Yeah. If I could take the group back to the third slide where we have the bullets under patient safety events, and I'm not advocating patient safety events just for the moment, but the language under those bullets, and that's, you know, they're common, they're less severe, but they should not occur with proper care, but not possible 100% of the time to various circumstances. And over time, as the evidence base improves, these could or should become serious reportable events. So some of that language, I think, we could use in terms of clarifying and helping to make this dichotomous decision point for the preventability.
Yeah, and at least on the other slides, this is Helen again, we at least try to, under the preventability axis, list universally versus usually. As you may recall with our discussion early on about the HACs from CMS, they use the term reasonably preventable. In a conversation, offline conversation I had with Sally, she, thought reasonably might be kind of somewhat in the eyes of the beholder. And perhaps, you know, we could think through what the right terms are.
Right. So just this is Greg, kind of as a motion to try to move us forward, because I know we want to talk a little bit about public comments, and I have one more definitional issue I want to close the loop on. But what I would propose is that Peter and Helen and Sally and myself, and if others of you are interested, you can volunteer to do so. But we work on trying to capture this discussion and put that framework and then get that back out to the committee. I think we can do that in pretty short order, along with kind of a straw list of that back of the envelope that Helen was talking about.
We have that straw list of stuff, and we'd be happy to circulate that around in a Survey Monkey type of thing as we tease out what you just described as well, Greg.
I think that'd be terrific. One other issue I'd like to touch on, and that is something that Deborah Nosen brought up. It's something I brought up in our face-to-face meeting, and that is the persistence of the term near miss, and with the hope that we could bring a close call. That's a personal hope of mine, and I'm not sure if others in the committee feel strongly about it or not, but I do think it would be another way of cleaning up some of our language and our thinking on these issues to try to move away from near miss and back to the term close call. So I'd like to hear comments on that as well.
This is Phil Schneider. Deb, I'd be interested in knowing, and I don't disagree with you, but the term near miss is so widely used, at least in the world that I live in, as close calls. Is there a growing sense that that's a better term? The first time I heard that was from you.
Oh, thanks. And thanks for bringing it up. I think, was that you, Greg? First brought it up. I think it's always been confusing to the field whether near miss, and frankly, I don't think the Joint Commission's definition has particularly helped as to whether or not it means that it actually happened but didn't hurt the patient, or it didn't even really happen. I mean, it's a fuzzy definition as is, but when you literally look at the two words, a near miss is a hit. It means it happened. And I know I ran this past a few people at the Joint Commission in terms of whether or not they would have heartburn if this changed. And I know Dr. Chasson doesn't like the term near miss. Paul Shivey, Jared Loeb, I mean, none of them are married to that term. And, in fact, they all would prefer it be changed because it's a misnomer, really. It doesn't state what you're trying to get at, which is, a close call, whether it hurt the patient or not.
This is Helen Lau. I think majority of the public will understand the term close call more than near miss.
Now, hi, this is Cynthia Hain. After conducting a survey at our organizations where the near miss terminology was extremely confusing, We changed it to close call, and we saw a substantial uptick in the number of reports that we got and that were reported accurately in that category.
And this is Greg. I think that in terms of where other industries are going, I think that aviation, I know the Air Force and military, from my experience, absolutely embraces the close calls concept over near miss.
And this is Doron Schneider. I would agree with that, and I think that we may need to think about a separate category, which some of the near misses are thrown into, which is the harm, which is less than serious. Just kind of throw that out there, that you have serious, then you have harm, which is not serious, and then you have the near miss, which, you know, was either a last barrier catch or a, you know, something really prevented harm from occurring. So it's really three tiers.
Yeah. I think, you know, this committee and this time, as I said in my email this morning, it's the perfect time to try and make some inroads into changing this term.
This is Peter. This is Goschel,
and I agree completely. Also did a round robin of the flip in terms, and so long as we're willing to take on, again, the ramifications of where this is already widely used, everyone I spoke to thought close call was much more clear in terms of what we were talking about, and agree that now is the perfect time.
Wait, this is Greg. Does anyone
probably
help?
I'm sorry, Greg. I was saying it would probably help us if the available taxonomies out there, for example, could share some definitions that we could share with the committee as to what is a close call versus a near miss, and do we really want to get into this issue of, you know, non-serious harm versus no harm distinctions?
I can answer that if you want. This is Michael. I've looked at a lot of taxonomies, and most of them embrace the concept that the degree of harm is completely uncoupled from the severity of the error, and they should not be linked. And most of us define things like close calls, and I agree that's a good term, as errors, regardless of the severity, which do not proceed in a trajectory that results in harm. But yes. If you want to really categorize errors, you can look at extraordinarily severe errors without coupling them to their outcome. It's a separate axis.
Great, thanks.
Yep. This is Diane. I just wanted to second that, and we need to remember some of the serious reportable events are not linked to harm. So an event can be an SRE and not result in any harm to a patient. And I do think it's that kind of separate criterion that we want to look at. I do agree close calls is a better term, but I would not tie it to any level of harm.
Great. This is Kathy, and I would agree with that because I think the value in understanding close calls is what is it that happened in the system that allowed that close call to occur, and regardless of whether harm occurred. So if we can really focus on that, I think we could improve reporting and learning. So I agree with close calls with a definition to that effect.
All right. So this is Peter.
Pretty
overwhelming in terms of your response for close calls, and that's good. This will be an important component of the framework report that we're putting together with the other steering committee, and they all had similar comments about the not coupling severity with the event itself. And we'll review our language, make sure we move it towards close calls. And for the group, we'll circulate some of the definitional information as well, just so you're aware of it.
Great. Good.
That was easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple easy things in this group.
Peter, this is Greg. That was that had my list of issues that you brought up in your first presentation. That was a superb discussion, and I think we did move the ball down the field a bit. I wonder if this point in time that you'd be comfortable if we moved on to, because I do want to have us at least have a brief consideration of the comments that came in before people have to sign off at the end of the hour.
Yeah, I think the timing for what you suggest is perfect. I just wanted to reiterate again, the group sounds like we're comfortable with continuing with the term not. We will move towards tiering. We'll provide some language around preventability. We'll distribute for SurveyMonkey sort of the tiering of the existing SREs, and then we will begin to use the term close calls instead of never, I'm sorry, near missed, and we'll get you some definitions for those. Is that all of the items?
Yes.
Okay.
This is Janet Corrigan. I want to make one comment. I actually didn't hear the group say that they were comfortable continuing with the word not, but that the definition needed to accommodate both never and not. A recognition that both types of events are included here, ones that should never occur, and ones that we can reduce to very low levels with proper intervention. Am I off on that?
I think in implicit within the discussion around tiering, Janet, was that there are some clearly that should not occur 100% of the time.
But essentially, we have both types of events included in the definition. I'm very comfortable with that, and we're recognizing that some should never occur, and some we don't have adequate evidence that they can be preventable 100%. That, to me, is language that accommodates both types.
Yep.
Greg and Sally, is that your understanding? Because that was mine as well.
I thought we were going to get to that more in the tiering, though. I thought that was where our direct discussion was heading us.
Yep.
Yeah,
this is Greg.
Go ahead, Greg. Make your comment.
I agree with Janet. I think the one challenge, and I think this is much more of a challenge for the NQF, frankly, than for the committee, is going to be in making sure that we can kind of recast the SREs in public opinion, that it includes both of these issues and that it isn't all under the umbrella of never. And I think this committee is certainly there.
Yep.
But I think that, again, that will be a bit of a challenge, but that's what it's about.
This is Duran. The way I'm looking at it, it would read serious reportable events are serious, unambiguous, adverse events, period.
That are worthy.
Preventable, and you'd remove should never occur. And there's your new definition.
Yep, this is Tejal Ghani. But the problem with removing the preventable at all is, I mean, then you could talk about, you know, a major complication from a procedure, which is a serious adverse event. So, I mean, I think you start opening it up to a lot of clinical complications if you remove preventable from that initial definition.
And
well, my point was that we were going to address that at the tiering level.
So the tiering is really going to be for our 28 events, but how do we then say that we've excluded, you know, the major hemorrhage from the procedure that, you know, was a known complication? Maybe it was preventable, but maybe it, you know, I mean, I just think if, you know, if you take preventable out, there's a lot of adverse events that are severe that occur out there, and then how do you justify not having all of those on the list?
Well, Janet, I think you stimulated us again. I think conceptually we agree that there's some things that just should never happen and some things that should not occur. But the challenge for us as we put together the language here will be to try and have everybody sort of agree to the language, not necessarily the concepts. And the last couple of minutes of discussion highlights that up again. So.
Well, I think that we can work up some language and share it back with the group. And we just need to capture that, frankly, this definition of serious reportable events does encompass both ones that we know to be entirely preventable, but others that we currently know can be reduced to very low levels. We can express that our goal overall is that we will strive to reduce these to zero of all types. And just, you know, develop language that I think explains and use it as an educational opportunity to explain to the public at large really how complex this area is, that some of these very much are 100% control. Others we can do a whole lot more than what currently are.
This is Duran again. I would offer the word unexpected because a complication, as Tejal was pointing out, is expected at a certain rate. So we could throw in a word unexpected in there, which would then be defined separately as we've defined the word even serious. Unexpected is something that is exactly that, as opposed to a major hemorrhage after a surgery, which has an expected rate to occur.
Well, we'll certainly work on the language as best as we can, but I think we've clearly got the concept together for an agreement for tiering within the SRE listing.
And Peter, if I can just make one final comment, and that is that it's important for us to continue to remember that the goal of this effort is to come up with a list that should be publicly accountable. And I think that Tejal's point is well taken. We have to put a boundary on that. Otherwise, we'll just drown in a sea of reports and not be able to do anything to move forward. We need to focus on the few, and those few are defined by those to which we think we should be accountable to the public, because they hit all of those issues that, you know, the unexpected that Duran talked about, the unambiguous, the usually preventable, all those pieces. And that's why this is committee work and not a simple, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down that a group of people can do in a back room. And so that is always going to be a messy issue for us. But I think if we keep in mind the goal of this are those things to which we should be held publicly accountable, I think that it gets rid of the incredible laundry list that Tejal, I think, rightly points out could become our fate if we left this wide open.
Sure. I agree.
Good. Let's move on to comments.
Yep. Thank you, everybody. That was very good, very robust, and I think we're getting focused. So.
Peter, this is Sally. As you're moving into the second part of the discussion, I regrettably have to hop off and go back to my poorly attended ghost conference here in D.C. but thanks to everybody. I really appreciate everybody taking time to do this. This has helped me clarify a lot of thinking. I will talk, Peter, Greg, and Helen. I want to touch base with you guys to get an update on the balance of the conversation.
Yep, we'll
and I look
up.
Forward to talking to all of you soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellie.
Bye.
Bye. All right, Greg, did you...
So, Peter, I wonder if it would be helpful if you could give us... everyone should have two pieces of information for this. The first is a summary of the comments received. It's a single-page table. And then secondly is the comments on the revised SRE definitions, that, and for that is 61. That's a number of pages long. Before we dive into any specifics, Peter, I wonder if it would be helpful if you could give us a couple of pieces of color commentary, or maybe Helen as well, in terms of, A, you know, was this a extraordinary amount of comment to receive, or was this kind of what you'd expect at this stage in the process? I recognize that we generally don't go out to public comment in the usual process at this stage. And the second would be your sense of the overall flavor of the comments, just as a kind of general context point, and then for us to get into some specifics.
Sure. I'm happy to do that, Greg, and thanks. For those of you who are on the webinar, Lindsay will have both the summary sheet and then the summary comments up. For those of you who don't have it, the documents, I think, are pretty straightforward. The summary sheet, I think, actually reflects what I thought was going on quite accurately, and that is we had fairly balanced inputs on the primary issue, which was the words, never versus not. And there was, I think, reasonable and balanced inputs on both sides of it. The other items within the comments on the definition were far less contentious, and therefore we did not get that many comments overall. And then we had a variety of comments that were focusing in on the SRE list themselves and kind of missed the mark of what we were actually up to in terms of asking comment on the definition. And so we have... what I would consider a reasonably good volume of input, good balance of the input, which is what the consensus type process is, through public comment, and then a little misunderstanding here and there. But overall, I thought it was a good and robust public comment period. Helen, did you want to add anything? Or?
Par for the course, Greg.
Yep. So with that... you know, I would ask everyone to turn to that main list, and what we do is try to categorize the comments into similar buckets so that you get a flavor for where everything is, rather than dragging you through everybody's individual comments and letters. And so you've got them categorized in a variety of ways. The first segment is primarily picking up on those individual comments on specific SREs. And for the purpose of today, I don't think we need to spend any real time on that. We'll incorporate these more later when we begin to review the individual SREs. There is then a couple of buckets around general definition comments. Then they are further broken into two categories, those supporting never and those that are against removing the term never, and then a variety of other ones and twosie types of comments a little bit later on. There's the criteria, the definition, terms for adverse, for event, for preventability, there's a few of those. The only other one that got more of the comment was around the term serious, and that's where we had some of the issues around and risk thereof, et cetera, in that side. So that's the layout. I would suggest, Greg, that we not bother with the front part, and then we move into some general definition comments, see if the group has any response to those comments, and then just move through the different sequences through the rest of the list. And that should take us probably within about a half hour, I would imagine we could be finished up.
Right, and just one quick process check. Peter, this is Greg. When do we have to break for public comment? At the beginning of the call, we did not have any members of the public on the phone. I don't know if that has changed or not.
Before we close out the call at the end, we just take a moment. But we can go through the entire public comments ourselves and then take that break at the end.
Okay. So I'll let you drive us through this list. What I'm asking people to do then is to focus now on the comments on the revised SRE definitions, the end of 61. And Peter, I'm going to let you drive us through this.
Oh, okay. Sure, by all means. So as I mentioned, the first five comments are related to specific SREs, so it's not appropriate to be reviewing them at this point in time. We'll incorporate those for later. I would then have you look at the general definition comments. Those are 6 through 9. And within there, there's nothing that we specifically have to react to. These are sort of context type of comments.
What I'd like people to do is if there was a particular comment or issue that caught their eye or something they think that we ought to bring up for further discussion to raise it. Now, I would actually begin that by on comment number 6. This actually came from CMS is how this work applies to organizations and practices. Because I think that from a CMS perspective, we've got the hospitals covered. We're looking at nursing homes and dialysis facilities and long-term care facilities, and how does it apply to a practice or a organization that is directly providing health care? A great provocative question, something I think that we haven't delved into, huge increase in the scope of work, but I thought it was interesting the origin of that comment from CMS.
Thanks, Greg. And you took the words right out of my mouth about asking for comments from everybody on specifics, and this is a perfect one to get started on. So others want to jump in with Greg on this particular comment? Thanks, Greg.
Hi, this is Stan. I guess I agree. I agree completely that I think once we get into places like practices and ambulatory care centers, that the kinds of things that we're going to be looking at are going to be almost completely different than the ones that we're talking about now in terms of our list.
Yeah, this is Michael. That seems part of the great fun of what I look forward to here. However, I would say that the word reportable is going to be the one we need to think the most about when we go to environments, unlike hospitals, where there is no clear reporting channel, and where I would propose we're going to need to recommend that be invented and created in addition to proposing the things that should flow in it.
I agree completely. I think probably that has to be the first thing.
Some of that will be covered as well in our framework reporting framework for reporting steering committee, but it's a good point. Thanks, Mike and Sam. Other comments on number six then, or any others on 7, 8, and 9?
This is Tejal Gandhi. I guess one that I wanted to revisit, or it sort of was briefly mentioned earlier, was this whole phrase or risk thereof in the I think it's in the definition of serious, right? And you know that I know has raised a lot of concerns with this whole issue of then are we reporting the close calls and near misses? And there were several comments I think about that throughout here, so just wanted to bring that up again because I, you know, personally I think that does kind of open up the reporting to a much broader set of things if we start adding the or risk thereof piece in.
Yeah, this is Diane. I mean, thinking back on the discussion around risk thereof, what the committee meant was risk of harm, not risk of the event happening, which I think are two different things. And the latter gets more at the close call near miss. I think what we wanted to acknowledge with the or risk thereof was the fact that not all of the SREs involve harm, although they all involve risk of harm. So that might be an area where we need to provide further clarification there. You know, also in number seven, building on that question is the question of whether close calls should be reported, which again captures what Michael just said, that we do need to look at what we really mean when we say reportable. Are we talking about reporting to some sort of other entity, or in the case of close calls, are we talking about individual facilities developing their own systems for recording those close calls and reporting them within a facility, rather than expanding the list of what's reportable?
And on number eight, this is Kathy. I did have a conversation with Dr. Brotman. He's with AdvaMed, which is the Advanced Medical Technology Association, and his comments are pretty self-explanatory, and they might be jumping ahead of us a little bit here. But again, his concern was just to make sure that with any serious reportable events involving medical devices, that he wanted the committee to be aware that there's a very established process already with FDA. And so, again, in the spirit of making sure that everything's coordinated and not adding confusion to the field, he wanted to make sure there was consistency.
That's a good point. I enjoyed this comment.
Yes, and that was based on not just Steve Brotman's input, but the whole AdvaMed had a phone call on it to discuss it. So I thought he made some good points.
Yeah, this is Doron Schneider. as far as going back to the risk thereof, I clearly recall the conversation, and I think that we may need to revisit where it's placed, because it's placed in a definition for serious, where it describes, serious now describes an event that can result in death or loss of body part, disability or loss of bodily function, or the risk thereof. So that really does open up a lot of problems. Serious reportable events have other sub-bullets, of which the event must be adverse, any of the following, adverse, indicative of a problem, in a healthcare facility, or important for public credibility or public accountability. By having the risk thereof at the top level, at the serious level, I think we open up a lot of ambiguity there. And I would just offer that perhaps we should put that in at the adverse bullet level, where it really falls below the major definition. So it would then be adverse or the risk thereof at that level, or that we may need to remove it entirely. It's for me problematic where it's currently positioned as part of the term for serious.
I think in general we want to have the least amount of ambiguity possible in all of our terms. And
when we talked about it at the committee, we said, well, we are going to then selectively use the word the risk thereof as we go through each of the different SREs, and that I would agree with. But by having it at the top level under the definition for serious, that's where everything that falls below it has the risk thereof as a part of it. So I like the phrase the risk thereof, but I think we should be selectively using it as we go through each of the different SREs. So, for example, if you have an ABO incompatible blood transfusion and no harm occurred, know, that was the risk thereof. We better report that. Yeah, but so then you could theoretically use that there. But I just don't think it belongs at the top level as part of the serious definition.
This is Tejal. I definitely agree with that, with the way you're describing that we would use it.
Michael, I agree also, and I think that we might consider dealing with that in the new column if we want it on preventability.
Right. Yeah.
That's a good option.
This is Greg. I think that sounds like a good way of moving that concept forward, and I agree that having it up top makes it a blanket. Yet we want to consider it, but we want to consider it selectively as it applies to specific issues. And I think I think the way Duran put that together gives us a good way forward.
Diane, does that keep you comfortable? Because you were trying to keep us separating risk of harm versus risk of event.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay.
And just, Peter, before we move on, one thing I'm hearing just from to pick up the thread on comment 8 is that we would be asking, I guess this would be work for you folks at NQF, but to at some point make sure that what we're doing squares with the FDA and the issue, and we take care of the issue that AdvaMed raises.
Yes. Yep. By all means. All righty.
Well, if I could add something, this is Michael again. This is adding more work to you, which I don't mind doing, and that is for each of these, there is an entire set of footnotes that has to do with where they may already be required to be reported. I don't know if we want to get into that or not, but when you say things like comment 1, maternal deaths, and some of these others, there already are channels for those, and there's an entire other database of comments that we could add to these if we are going to look into existing taxonomies, standards, and regulations.
Right. I don't misconstrue my comments. I wouldn't say we're ignoring any of these comments. It's just trying to process them at the appropriate time as we review all of the SREs as well as what our primary task is at this point in time. But your comment is appropriate, Michael. Thanks. So I'm mindful of the time. Technically, we've got about 20 minutes left, and we want to make sure that we do try to cover inputs on the batch of public comments overall.
Yeah, this is Eric again, and I looked through them quickly, and again today. Maybe the best thing to do with the remaining time is, were there any other aha moments? Were there any comments that you picked up or anybody else picked up that really we may have missed that stand out as providing new information that should be incorporated or be discussed at this point in time?
Well, we've covered the never versus not, and we have now just covered the risks thereof discussion. The third piece was
serious,
and the ambiguity of something. But
Peter, just before we move on to that, just so we can make sure that we give full consideration to the folks who commented, what I believe is that we don't need to spend a lot of time discussing comments 10 through 26 and 29 through 45, which were both the against and for changing of never to not, because based on our prior discussion, we've come up with a way of, I think, of squaring that, that provides us a way forward. And by the way, all these parties will have another crack at that later in the consensus development process.
Yep, that's a good way of stating that for the record, Greg. Thank you.
Does anyone disagree with that approach before we move on?
No, that's fine.
Hearing and then let's...
This is Debbie. I want to go back to one of the earlier comments related to the tubing connection issue. And I think what comment was it here? Number 5. I don't know if you covered this before I got on the call earlier today or not, but you know, there's been so much about tubing connections being problematic, not just with oxygen and other gases. Has this ever been considered in the past, or did I miss a conversation about it?
Deb, no, you haven't missed a conversation, but this borders on the specifics around individual types of SREs as opposed to the definition of SREs. And so I was going to bring these five comments back for a later discussion when we begin to review the individual SREs. But
thank you. That's right. You did say that. Thanks, Peter.
No, that's okay. It's a critically important issue overall that I would encourage us not to forget. That's my own personal bias on that one. All righty. So Greg has moved us in lump sum all the way up to basically comment 46, and we have comments 46 through 60 that we have left to cover either on block or individually. We're suggesting that criteria for SRE classification, there's no action really needed on comments 46 or 47. But if others have a comment that they want to make, by all means, now would be a good chance. If not, then would like for you to look at comments 48 through 51. This is just a few comments regarding the actual term definition, adverse, and it doesn't seem to be anything contentious in there from my point of view. But so hearing none, we'll move on. There is one comment about the term event, really no action needed there, and then there is a couple of comments on the term preventable, comments 53-54. John James is encouraging us to continue to stay focused on errors of omission versus error of commission, but there's no real specific action needed here. And then that moves us up to comments 55 through 60, which is the next biggest batch of comments, and that's around the term serious itself. If we want to have any comments on these five, that would be a good time now, please.
This is Helen. I talked to Helen Lau. I talked to Doug Bonica-McKaiser, and he put comment number 58. I think the key issues here is I think we might have covered that earlier on the risk thereof. The key is we talk about close call, you know, I think is how we define the close call because one organization might define it differently from another organization. And also if an organization already had worked very hard on human factors and has a culture of recognizing this type of event, then, you know, we might see an increase in the number of reporting. So will that make the organization look bad, you know, from that perspective? And how is it down the line that we could have something like an apple-to-apple type of comparison? So that's his concern.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that.
This is Michael. I'd just like to comment regarding 59 although the comment itself is a little confusing to me, what it does in my mind is it tacks down the fact that if we remove risk thereof from the definition of serious, what we're left with is okay with me in that it defines serious pretty much as events that have serious possible outcomes. And that clarifies it for me, and I'm happy with it.
So this is Erin Braden-Baker from Partners Healthcare. Maybe I can add a little bit of clarity of what we were thinking here, and I can use the example. If we considered a fall that had no injury but carried a risk thereof, so a patient fell, there might have been the risk that that serious harm could have happened, but it didn't. So does the group consider that kind of event something that should be reported as an SRE?
Well, other comments?
I that would be one where I would think we would want to operationalize the risk thereof very selectively, and I would not put it in that bucket for falls, because every fall has the risk thereof for causing significant disability or death. You know, but I would go back to my ABO incompatibility example, and the way that definition is currently worded is that you have a patient death or serious disability associated with a hemolytic reaction due to ABO incompatible transfusion. Well, you know, we should then, in that case, use the risk thereof under death or serious disability, because that represents a serious flaw in that organization's ability to deliver blood, whether or not that patient had death or significant disability. So, you know, I think we're going to have to go through each one of these and think, are we going to really want to know if this event occurred in regardless of harm? Falls, I would not want to encourage reporting of all falls.
Yeah, this is Diane. I agree with that. It was not the intent of the committee to say that every fall that presented any risk of harm would be reportable. The example that I think of, to go along with Duran's, is the wrong site, wrong procedure, wrong patient events in the current SRE list, which are not linked to harm, but they're events that we would want to know about and would want to have reported regardless of whether there was harm. So in those cases, I think you would want to apply the or risk thereof, whereas for some events like falls and, again, pressure ulcers, you would not.
This is Erin Grain again. I agree with that thought process. How so? Would it be clear that the institutions would then apply their risk thereof to their own individual cases?
This is Greg. I think that what we would do is when we go through each of the individual safety events in the SRE list, that we would make a decision whether or not they should be reported. Just as it, in the case of harm or disability or loss of bodily function, or whether or not they should be reported not only for death or loss of body part or disability, loss of bodily function, or risk thereof. And so we would, with each one of them, have to make that determination on a case-by-case basis. And Duran's earlier comment of pulling it out of the top-line definition gives us the leeway to do that.
And I would think, just to add, this is Duran again, I would think that, you know, if you look at those bullets, you know, you could be an SRE if you have an event that's either adverse, indicative of a problem in a healthcare facility system, or important for public credibility or public accountability. So by definition, each one of these would have the latter bullet. We want to have reportability. The question then is really the first two. So you would go through each one and apply the risk thereof in the context of bullet A, was it adverse, or bullet B, is it indicative of a problem in a healthcare facility's safety systems? And that really captures the risk thereof. And some may be just that second bullet. Others may be one and two, if you follow me.
Okay. Yep, that sounds good.
All right. Thank you. Any other comments on those five or six? All right, if not, then we have a last comment, number 61, which is basically in agreement with the term unambiguous and no actions needed there. So, Greg, if you are comfortable, we basically have reviewed all of the comments, although some of them clearly in en bloc fashion. And I think, at least in my way of review, we've covered all of the issues that were raised.
I agree. This is Greg, and I think that we also have a list of a couple of follow-ups, and so I think the pathway is clear. I think at this point, Peter, do we need to take that break for public comment?
This would be a good time. So, operator, if you could check to see if there's any other callers on our public comment line or others that signed in as public comment on this line.
Yes, sir. I'm not showing anyone else.
Okay. So we'll take it that there are no public comments for this conference call. And with that, Greg, I believe we have done our work, unless there are other items of business that the committee members would like to bring up at this time.
This is Eric again. Yeah. I'm noodling about the falls and the risk versus the autonomy piece. Again, in thinking about programs that don't report at this time, and trying to encourage them to report, I think we have to be very mindful that there are environments where there is presumed risk because of the questions of autonomy, the allowance of autonomy. and myself right now, having started training for a cross-country ski event, am totally beat up. But it was my decision to go out and to make those attempts. So, again, as I think about encouraging people to report in environments that haven't reported so far, we have to be very mindful of the autonomy issues that are out there.
And this is Duran. I just wanted to reemphasize my concern about the PSEs and the Venn diagram issue. I don't, as one vote, don't support the SREs being outside of the PSE, and I personally would like to see them as part of it, and to really think about it that way, because you're not going to be clear at all to the public to have a secondary definition of patient safety events and then have SREs be outside of that. I think we need a lot of work around clarifying that.
I agree with that, Phil Schneider.
And this is Chris Koschel. I agree with that. I also, being someone who really appreciates the visuals and what we've gotten in advance, wonder whether Peter or Gregor or someone can give us a timeline for when we might expect some of that behind-the-scenes work that you're going to do, so that we'll have something to look at based on today's call.
Yeah, no, it's Peter. We'll want to get that all tied up within the week or so, and hopefully have something out for you all by mid-next week certainly by the end of next week. That would be our time frame.
Yeah, perfect. That really helps for planning. Great.
Yeah, and from my own vantage in terms of this issue of having the SREs in or outside of that PSE box, I put it outside for the purposes of discussion. However, unless there's others on the committee who feel strongly, it actually quite comfortably fits into the upper left box of the patient safety events. It's fine by me to move the SREs into that larger group.
That would make sense.
Then if you had we're back to where we started, guys, because if you had a circle around all of it, I think you're going to have to visually capture the close calls that are not in the PSE group, but that also fit within the four-box analysis that you have put up.
Well, we'll send a couple of options out and around and figure out ways to work with the group in terms of getting ongoing opinion. For me, it seems to work easier to think about it in terms of severity versus frequency. For others, it seems to work better in terms of thinking about the events themselves. And for others yet, it's, what impacts the patient and what does the patient see? So there's numerous ways to look at these things. It's just a matter of how we want to categorize them or characterize them. Greg, any other comments that you want to make for the group?
So in terms of specific follow-up, what people should be expecting is some product from the NCARE folks and Sally and I over the next few weeks to get your reactions, that we'll try to summarize the comments from today. I also think that as it evolves, we'd want to hear, I think, each one of our calls from Helen and Janet when she can join us and Peter about their kind of growing framework and how this work fits in, because I think that that's evolving. That will help deal with some of the issues around where this fits in with patient safety events. And finally, I want to thank everybody for a really terrific discussion. We got a lot accomplished in a short time.
Now, this is Peter. I'd like to echo that. This is very robust, and on the spectrum of groups that are out there, this one's working very well on some very complicated topics, so I thank you all for that input, and we'll get that information back to you soon enough. And with that, we'll conclude the call. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Great job.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.